Hey, welcome into Magic Weekly. I'm your host, Jake Chapman. Monday, October 14th, the date today. As we look back at the week that was, and we look forward to the week that will be for your Orlando Magic. Final preseason game on the schedule coming up. That's Thursday at Amway Center against the Miami Heat. And then we do it for real. Next Wednesday, the 23rd, the Cleveland Cavaliers in town. That's opening night. Can't wait for that. But a busy week that was for the Magic. Let's go back to 1 week ago. The Magic followed up their impressive preseason debut against the Spurs with an equally impressive win over the Pistons last Monday. 115-91 was the final in Detroit. Aaron Gordon got busy that night. He had 13 points in the first quarter, finished up with 25, and he was feeling good postgame.
Just trying to find a way of playing that's sustainable. It's something that we can do every single night. So we'll see if we can keep it going. I believe we can. We're going to definitely get better on the defensive and offensive set, end of the floors, and we got to just tighten a couple of things up. But at the same time, stay relaxed and stay poised.
Then it was on to Atlanta to see the Young Hawks. That was last Wednesday night. And with the Magic beginning the preseason out on the road for a three-game trip, a couple trends started to emerge. We had a sense heading into the season that this was going to be a team, its identity was going to be rooted in defense and rebounding, obviously. But I'm not sure anyone expected turnover numbers like we saw the first three games of the preseason. They forced 24 in San Antonio in the preseason debut, 20 more in Detroit last Monday, and then an eye-popping 27 Atlanta turnovers on Wednesday night. Magic rolled to a 97-88 win in that one. Terrence Ross gave the firepower off the bench. He had 20 points, and Jonathan Isaac stuffed the stat sheet that night. 13 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block shot. Oh, and 5 personal fouls to boot. Here was J.I. postgame on Wednesday.
I feel great. I think it's been a great preseason. Just being able to just get out here and run and play. But yeah, I'm looking forward to having a great season with this team. And yeah, that's what I'm focused on. But the preseason has been great, and I'm definitely feeling myself out. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling confident.
So armed with a 3-0 preseason start and a defense that was forcing 20-plus turnovers each night, the Magic came home for the back nine of its exhibition season. And that was when things went a little haywire. Both Friday night against Boston, Sunday night against the Sixers, the Magic struggled mightily shooting the ball to the tune of just 31% from the field on Friday. That ain't going to cut it. They were up around 39% on Sunday night, but both were losses to two of the better defensive teams in the Eastern Conference. And on Sunday, Steve Clifford was a little bit salty.
That's crazy. That's crazy. And I just told them, and it's not okay. I don't care if it's exhibition season, preseason or not. You're not building the right habits. We didn't have the right mentality. And they had their way with us. And it's going to start with getting the right mentality, the right intensity. You can talk about the guys that didn't play. Those guys in the room can all do a lot better. So I'm the person most in charge of how we play. And that's not okay with me, any of it.
Should be noted, the Magic were without Nick Vucevic for both games as he rests up a little bit. Sunday, they didn't have Evan Fournier or Terrence Ross either, so that explains the offensive woes a little bit. But the past two games, that Magic defensive identity has kind of gone by the wayside a little bit, and that's going to be a big key moving forward. You got to bring that energy and intensity night in and night out, especially, obviously, when the regular season gets going. You'll have one final tune-up on Thursday night against the Heat, couple days to rest up, and then again, next Wednesday, Cavaliers at Amway Center, opening night, should be a blast. Then you go on the road to Atlanta, Saturday the 26th. You go up to Toronto to see the World Champs on Monday the 28th, and then you round out the month of October back here at Amway Center, Wednesday the 30th, the New York Knicks come to town. And as always, head to OrlandoMagic.com for tickets. My guest today is Vincent Goodwill. He's on Twitter at Vince Goodwill, Yahoo senior NBA writer. He's spent time in Detroit. He's spent time in Chicago, and he joins me now for this week's edition of Magic Weekly. Vin, what's happening?
Hey, Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate it. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Magic. I want to get your thoughts on the league as a whole as we wrap up the preseason here in the next week and a half or so. But let's just talk about the Eastern Conference for now. Vinny, break down the Eastern Conference, the landscape of it as we head into the regular season, just kind of the hierarchy. How do you see it panning out?
Well, I think the hierarchy is very clear, at least at the top. It's Milwaukee, I think, being in the lead when you have the MVP, when you are the team that had the best record last year, and had a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals before the Raptors sort of stormed back. Clearly, to me, that puts you at the top. The Philadelphia 76ers, from a talent standpoint, from a defensive versatility standpoint, to me, they're second, and they're creeping. They have to figure out the shooting situation. I know we'd like to make a big deal out of Ben Simmons taking a meaningless three-pointer against our Sisters of the Poor, but That's fine. But that's fine. I need to see that type of production. I need to see that type of effort in a regular season, let alone before we get to the playoffs. And then after that, like the Eastern Conference middle class, that's a little more intriguing. You got Boston, you got Indiana, you got Miami, you got maybe Brooklyn, depending on how things shake out. You got Detroit, and then you got Orlando, like, and then Toronto. Like, I think you have more playoff caliber teams in the Eastern Conference this year than people are giving them credit for. We always like to think of Eastern Conference as the least in conference. But I like to think that there are 11 teams that have playoff aspirations, that have playoff-level talent. And once you get past Indiana, once Oladipo gets back, Miami and Boston, it's anybody's game.
You got Indiana up there. Indiana with Oladipo. Because I'm with you. I think as soon as they get Vic back, what they were able to put together last year, and yeah, you know, there's been some changes, but I think Brogdon will be a great signing. I do think Indiana could surprise some people, like really surprise some people, like a deep, deep playoff run. Do you agree?
I definitely agree. I'm a huge fan of Nick McMillan. I think where he excels is those low variances, where there may not be as high of a ceiling, but that floor certainly is not low. And when you have those type of rosters, that means you're going to win more games than you should. And I think before Oladipo gets back, they find an identity, and you find out a way to get guys like Sabonis and Miles Turner on the same pace, maybe play them together. Then you have Malcolm Brogdon, who I think is a phenomenal player, maybe not a superstar, but a phenomenal player. Like, I think he's the perfect fit next to some of the quote-unquote, you know, combo-ish guards in the league, you know, guards who need the ball but aren't necessarily point guards. He's that perfect complement. So I think they're going to be in really, really good shape. And then by the time Oladipo comes back, let's just say it's, you know, mid-November or early December, they'll be ready to rock.
Vinny Goodwill joins me. He is the senior NBA writer for Yahoo. We saw Philadelphia last night here in Orlando, Vince, and to me it was like, I think that team goes as Embiid goes, obviously, but Ben Simmons is kind of the kicker there. Like, if he can add that next element to his game, I love bringing in Horford. I love Josh Richardson. It feels like they put this thing together properly just based on where they were last year. I felt like last year they were kind of throwing darts at the wall. Now it feels like they have a nice base there. But as you look at them and as you project, is it they go as Ben Simmons goes, or is it they go as Embiid goes?
No, they go as Embiid goes as long as Simmons is not a huge liability.
Right.
But to some degree, he's going to be a liability because he's not a great shooter, right? And you need some level of shooting, especially with the starting five that they have when you have Horford, you know, Al Horford playing more four than five. But the fact that he's not willing to shoot, the fact that he's not a threat to shoot beyond the paint, to me, that is the biggest question. It's more or less the X factor. They're going to go as Embiid goes. If Embiid is healthy, and if Embiid keeps his head right and everything else, he's an MVP player. He's a top three MVP candidate based off of everything that the 76ers do and how important he is to that team. Simmons is the X factor in terms of because he plays the, you know, point guard. And now because he's got the contract, you've gotten all that validation. Where's the incentive now to become a better shooter? Mm. Where's the incentive now to be a shooter? You've been validated by everything that you've been over your first 2 years, which is a pretty good player, but the same player in year one that you were in year two. So where's the incentive for him to shoot as opposed to and develop and be a better player and turn this into a championship team? I'm not sure. I'll have to see it.
You mentioned Nate McMillan a moment ago. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in the league. Steve Clifford probably should be on that list as well. Do you agree with that? Just give me your assessment on Steve Clifford. And I guess just overall, what you think of what Weltman and Hammond have done down here and kind of the future here for the Magic?
Well, I think Steve Clifford is one of those. He's a grinder. And to me, that's not a negative thing. I think sometimes you hear that and you think, oh, he doesn't have the natural abilities of some of the other coaches. But no, he leaves no stone unturned. And I like that about him. And he's very frank and candid without throwing guys under the bus. I think, especially when you're coaching a young team, you have to have a mix of accountability publicly while also giving them encouragement while not shielding them from their own responsibilities. Mm. I think Steve Clifford walks that line quite well, or at least as well as I can see. And when you talk about the front office, you talk about Wellman, and you talk about John Hammond, the way that they've turned over this roster over the past couple of years, you know, deciding what to keep was probably the biggest thing, because I've always felt like the Magic drafted well. It was just a matter of, do you have too many young players who are basically at the same level when they need an anchor? Mm. Like when you have Vucevic and Tobias Harris and Oladipo, that would be the pretty good nucleus of a playoff team right now. But when they're at their, you know, their young, super young stage, and they're all trying to figure each other out, and they're all trying to figure out their way around the league, that's hard to be conducive toward an environment of winning. And I think now you're a step above that. You made the playoffs last year. I'm very curious about Jonathan Isaac. I love him physically, you know, and what he can do, especially defensively. Will he and Aaron Gordon work together? You know, that to me seems like the biggest question, not necessarily a question of talent, but a question of fit. And are you going to go forward with Vucevic? Are you going to go forward with Fournier? You know, what about your point guard situation? You have a lot of different questions still, even with the roster improvements and sort of shuffling it up a little bit. But to me, there's still a playoff caliber roster.
Isn't that interesting, though, Vinny? I always say you're either coming or you're going. You better have a timeline. You know, you want to build around similarly aged guys, I guess, and say, okay, this is our 3-year plan. This is our 5-year plan. But I think the Magic have kind of, I guess, pacified both sides of that argument. You have that bedrock in place of the veterans, Nick Vucevic, Terrence Ross, that brought back over the course of the summer, Evan Fournier, and some of the other guys we mentioned. But then you see what it's going to be in 5 to 7 years. You see the future as far as Isaac and Mo Bamba and hopefully Markelle Fultz. You know, Gordon is still a fairly young player. I love the fact that it's not a 3-year plan, it's not a 5-year plan, it's a, we're going to try to win now, and then we're going to try to win in 3 to 5 years. I feel like, you know, you look around the league and you know, front office executives feel like they have to put forth a plan. When are we going to be good? And the Magic are like, we're going to sign our good players back, and we're going to keep the veterans in place, and then we're going to develop from within as well. It feels like it's almost a novel concept, Vinny.
Novel, not even novel, it's almost unheard of, especially in today's day. Like I think sometimes we lose perspective when we talk about different, you know, eras, and we talk about different how contracts are structured. Remember, you know, at the turn of the decade, I know, Jake, you know, you're a little bit on the younger side, but remember the turn of the millennium, and they had the 6-7 year max deals, and everybody wanted to lock their guys up to those type of deals, and then they did, and then they got crippled with the salary cap.
Right.
So they were like, okay, you know, we want the shorter deals. You know, the teams wanted the shorter contracts. So then you've got the shorter contracts, and all of a sudden you've got the guys, you know, opting out, forcing trades, maximizing leverage, and they're saying, wait, we don't have time to build our teams around that such a small window. You look at even what the Clippers are doing. They got a 2-year window with Kawhi Leonard before he's able to opt out. And while that puts pressure on the front office to basically maximize it, you wonder if they're leveraging too much of their future in pursuit of the present. So when you look at what Orlando is doing, and they're saying, okay, we're not going all in on anything, but we're going all in on everything.
Right.
And I think there's a difference with that. You're not taking one thing and forsaking the other. And I believe that you got to figure out, once again, the Vucevic situation. You got to figure out if he's a relic of, quote-unquote, the past NBA big man. Or if he is someone like a bedrock that you can build around with those phenomenal athletes you have on the wing, and you have your back-to-the-basket center. And let's see if all this can work together. Do you have a point guard? Are you going to acquire a point guard that can tie all of this together? To me, that's what separates the Magic from maybe a better team in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference is the point guard situation.
We're going to get to that in one moment. But I do want to ask you about Vucevic. It seems to me, Vinny, like, When you start to project centers, and especially in this day and age, into their 30s, you know, are you a high-impact player? Are you a shot blocker? Do you play above the rim? Or are you more like a Pau Gasol type? I think about how Pau aged so gracefully, and I think you covered him maybe for a year or two there in Chicago. You might have missed him. Anyways, Pau, throughout his 30s, because of his game, because of his low-impact game, soft hands, great passer, offensive-minded, obviously a good rebounder, he was able to play very effectively deep into his 30s. Do you see something similar with Vooch? I think because of the, I guess, low-impact style of his game, he should have another 7-8 years left playing at a high level.
Well, the thing, it comes down to one aspect to me, and one aspect completely outside of health being the most important thing. does he have light feet? If he has heavy feet, that means he cannot cover the fours and fives on the perimeter in this stretch four, stretch five era, or at least be serviceable enough to shift them to the help. And if you have Isaac on the backside of your defense to some degree, or at least one pass away to be able to come and play help side and hold you up for a dribble or two, then I think that's where you have a guy whose skill set can carry him well into, you know, his mid-30s and everything else. And that's obviously conducive, built upon Isaac developing into the type of player that he needs to be. Like, some of these things are so intertwined. When you're talking about career length, when you're talking about effectiveness and everything else, Isaac would be so good for Vooch in that way, because he does things that, so you don't have to ask Vooch to sort of minimize his own weaknesses. And he's not going to be that guy on the back end of the defense, you know, long and athletic and everything else. But if he can be serviceable enough and cover enough ground, then you've got something where he's not a liability.
Vincent Goodwill with me, senior NBA writer for Yahoo. Tell me about Fultz. What do you think? What have you seen? What's your gut instinct about how this is going to work out?
Well, I'm clearly a low risk move. And I think that, you know, we're not supposed to root as journalists for guys, you know, or we root for stories more or less. But I think everybody is sort of taking a hold to this Markelle Fultz situation with knowing so much of the backstory and so much of, you know, his struggles and how much of that has been a mental thing. And now it's not been a lack of want to, or at least it seemed to be a lack of want to. And you want to see that talent unlocked. So you want to see him be able to realize, you know, his full potential, or at least get somewhere close to it. To remember, this guy's a number one pick and, you know, so many other things before, you know, everything got derailed in Philadelphia, where you can blame so much of that on the environment in Philadelphia,
right,
and everything else, as opposed to, you know, him himself. And I think that's what we have to realize, that these kids are coming in 18, 19 years old. They're going to need a lot of structure. They need freedom within that structure, but they definitely need structure. So I'm very curious. You know, I would venture to say hopeful, because of some of the little things that I saw, you know, a lot of the clips of his preseason game against Detroit last week. And he looked quick. He looked decisive. If nothing else to me, Jake, if you're looking decisive with your moves, decisive with your shots, all the other stuff will come, because basically it's a matter of repetition. But even if you get to the basket, but your body language isn't there and you're just getting there as opposed to decisively doing it, then I would have questions. To me, he looks more decisive when going into his moves, and I think that's the best sign for the future. Regardless of however the shot is going and everything else, you need a player to feel and look confident and feel like he belongs, because this is a dog-eat-dog league, and there's no place for the timid.
Vinny, he gets where he wants. I mean, he's got that hezzy, and he's got those long arms, and he just puts that thing on a string, and he can go where he wants to go. Now, what happens at the end? What's the result? I think that's kind of the question, but he's been impressive so far, certainly. Impressive is probably a weird word to use. Just getting him out there was an important step for him. But I think starting to string together a couple, he had some nice assists last night. He can get up and down the floor. I think probably so far, it's so far so good as far as Markelle Fultz goes. I wanted to ask you about some NBA storylines headed into the season here. Zion Williamson, is he everything he's cracked up to be? Certainly so far he seems like it. What do you think about what you've seen from him so far? And the Pelicans, are they going to be good?
I think, first off, was Zion. Yeah, he looks real. He looks very, very real. I think the thing is, someone mentioned to me, a lead type, someone who I trust very, very, very explicitly. He said Zion is a five.
Mm.
He said, if you look at the way that New Orleans uses him, when they put him in a dunker spot, when he's a trailer on the fast break, and he can beat other guys down the floor, they're using him as a center, even though he's clearly not a center, as opposed to asking the question to be a three or a four. They're using him as a center, and he's getting to the open spots on the floor. To me, that's the most impressive thing. They're not giving him the ball and saying, hey, you know, go out there and get your own. He's running the floor. He's doing the little things. He's reading the floor and reading the pace of the floor. When you got Jrue Holiday and Lonzo Ball out there pushing the pace, and he's able to read, okay, Lonzo's penetrating here. Let me find the open spot where I can get in his line of sight, get away from a defender, and finish in one dribble or less. That is such an underrated quality that he has, and I think that's something
that I don't even think we have realized how special he is at that with New Orleans as a team. I have a hard time picking out a number one pick of recent vintage or any vintage that was so ballyhooed and so highly anticipated coming to a team that was basically kind of complete. When you look at, you know, Dwight Howard coming to Orlando, that was a team that needed a number one pick. When you talk about LeBron going to Cleveland, that was a team that needed a number one pick. Usually these type of phenoms, physical freaks, they come to a team depleted with talent. That's not the case in New Orleans. And with the haul that they get back from the Anthony Davis trade, on top of the little bit of talent that they had right already, and then you add David Griffin, and then you add some of the free agent signing, like, they should be a competent team headed into the fourth quarter of the season. Maybe not make the playoffs, but they'll certainly be able to play spoiler.
Will the NBA champion be from the city of Los Angeles this year?
Is there any other way?
Oh, come on. Come on. Denver, yes. Portland, Philly, Milwaukee. Show me some love. I think you're right. I mean, I would pick the Lakers as my favorites probably, and probably the Clippers second, but I'm going to be bummed if that's the case, I think. I am scared of a healthy, angry LeBron James. I would imagine the rest of the league is too.
Yeah, but here's the thing too, and it's not a negative thing, but LeBron is in year 17. At some point, by the time starts, if he ain't knocking on your door, he's at least got to be coming down the block. And as you get older, not from a standpoint of effectiveness, from a standpoint of mere health. And LeBron missed more games last year than he ever missed in his entire career, and that led to the Lakers subsequently missing the playoffs and him missing the playoffs for, you know, the first time in forever. So as long as he's healthy, and we got to remember, too, Anthony Davis, although he's been relatively healthy the past two seasons, he's had injury problems.
True.
So the same thing goes for Kawhi Leonard. The same thing goes for Paul George in the other L.A. team. So while I agree with you there's a chance, I just think it's a greater likelihood that the Clippers with Doc Rivers and that front office and some of that talent that's already there and Kawhi Leonard fresh off of that finals MVP, I have an easier time trusting what I see than believing in the unknown and some of the unknown and the other side of L.A. with the Lakers.
Vincent Goodwill with me. I'll get you out of here on this, Vin. Player poised to take a leap this year. Who's this season's Pascal Siakam?
Wow, you have got me.
I put you on the spot now.
Yeah, this is very much. Wow.
Who could you see being an all NBA guy? I'm not talking like get to the all-star level. Take that leap.
See, but it's weird because there's so many guys, like, I feel like we're entrenched in the, you know, in the superstar era.
Right.
Right? Where, you know, where this is the golden era, almost like, let's just say 1988 or something like that, where all the superstars are at least at the tail end of their prime, at the beginning of their prime. This is, Jake, you might have stumped the swap. I will say this, and I am by no means, do you take this as me being any level of Chicago homer, I'm very curious to see if Zach LaVine can turn himself from an all-NBA type talent to an all-NBA type of player.
Mm.
I love his talent. I love the fact that he can handle it, that he can do so many different things, that he can shoot the lights out, that he's athletically gifted and everything else, but I want to see it translate into winning. And if any guys around the league average 24, 5-5, we'd be saying they were all NBA talent. But if you're playing on a 20-win team or 26-win team, that doesn't register on the radar. So if he can turn those numbers into winning numbers, then we got something. Then we got an all-star. Then we got a quote-unquote superstar type of player, a superstar type of personality and everything else. So I'm very curious to see what Zach LaVine and Chicago does.
Chicago homer. He's Vincent Goodwill on Twitter. It's at Vince Goodwill, senior NBA writer for Yahoo. Thanks, Vin. I appreciate it, man.
I appreciate you, Jake.
All right, there he is, Vincent Goodwill, here on Magic Weekly. Jake Chapman with you. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Magic Weekly podcast. My name is Jake Chapman. Big thanks to my guest, Vinny Goodwill. Make sure you follow Vinny on Twitter, at Vince Goodwill, and check out all his stuff in Yahoo. And, of course, a big thanks to all of you. I'm back next Monday. Have a good week, everybody.